I try not to get caught up in like what the future looks like because the right now is hard enough. So like working on this moment rather than if I get caught up in 3 moments from now, I'm gonna miss out on this one. So like
Absolutely.
how do I stay present yet be prepared?
This is Studio Confessions, the art and wellness podcast. I'm your host, Luis Martin, the art engineer. Let me take you with me. Listen in for conversations with artists and culture makers alike. As we talk about their creative practice and what moves them, let me share my wax poetic monologues and how to activate your creativity to live an inspired and more beautiful life. That's right, I said beautiful. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Luis.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to see you here in the flesh.
I know, it's weird.
You're much taller than I imagined.
I am. I'm a pretty tall person.
And I'm probably much shorter than you imagined.
No, you're just right.
Oh, thank you.
Just what I imagined.
You're, listen, I'm three apples high, but that's another story. So you are visiting your old stomping grounds.
I am. Yeah, just here to get a change of scenery and see some family and friends.
Well, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be back in New York? What feels good?
The energy feels good. Just walking down the street, you know, I arrived in the rain, and it was actually beautiful. I miss rain, and I walked, you know, a couple blocks from the subway, and then my friends picked me up. They're like, "That's enough." But it's been really nice to, I didn't experience New York in the last year, obviously, and it feels good. Community, there's people out and about. I don't
well,
know.
You come at an amazing time. The cherry blossoms are out,
yes.
And spring is in the air, and people are super happy right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great shift in energy. Hopefully, we can hang on to it.
Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live in Los Angeles.
How's LA doing right now?
You know, it's opening back up too. Things are going well. Vaccines are working, it seems. And so we've been lucky to have outdoor space
right
the entire time, for the most part, with, you know, they did close the trails and everything for a while. But having space to just be outside has been such a blessing. And so now that businesses are starting to reopen, it's feeling more like a city again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So.
Where are you from originally?
The Midwest, from Minnesota.
How is Minnesota doing?
Okay, I think they are a complicated question. I love Minnesota, and I am also glad not to be there right now.
Sure.
It's always going to be home, and I felt like that it got too small, and
sure.
Just for me, it's in its own right a big city. You know, Minneapolis is a big city, St. Paul is a big city, but I wanted to like see what else was out there, and so Minnesota currently is doing okay. I mean, there's a lot of that. There's a complicated,
of course,
story there right now.
Sure, but this feeling you're talking about—it's a feeling that a lot of artists feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
I'm an actor and writer and producer and.
How exciting! You do the whole package.
Yeah, I can do it all.
Hello. So, what are you working on these days?
So I am wrapping up. I think wrapping up my cooking show. Which was just a fun little project.
I love it. No, you have to. Yeah, so this is, so many amazing things have happened during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been really tough, but from all of this turmoil comes these really amazing,
you
know, sparks of magic. Can you tell us a little bit about this project?
Yeah, so the show is called Are You Gonna Eat That? And the idea came before the pandemic, and it was kind of something I dabbled in here and there. It wasn't a regularly scheduled show. The original idea was walking down the street, being broke, and walking by a patio with a plate of food in front of somebody saying like, hey, are you going to eat that? And then grabbing it and just like running off. But it evolved into making some, like the tagline is making something out of nothing. So whatever ingredients you have in your kitchen, it's possible to make something, even if it's like condiment soup, you know? So you can use flavor profiles of many different things to throw together a plate of something. So it just kind of became this silly, my therapist gets mad at me when I call it my stupid cooking show because she's like, that's really diminishing. And I'm like, yes, you're right. So my very high art cooking show is a fun exploration of playing in the kitchen and still getting nourishment.
Well, my very high art view of it was like, whoa, this is so subversive, because it almost felt like, because it was a dark element. I think it was like your lighting or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is like a social commentary. Like, oh, America, these are the little scraps you're going to give me and I'm supposed to eat this. Are you going to make good with this? I was like, oh, this has many layers. I don't know if that's what you intended, but that's what
that,
I got.
I love that that's what you got. And yes, that was absolutely my intention. No, exactly. It wasn't my intention to subvert America's handouts. Exactly. But I mean, I guess I can see that. And you know, being an artist can be difficult, and even just coming up with an idea to create something. Like, I don't know if you've gone back and watched the canon of Are You Gonna Eat That? But episode one is like me putting hot sauce on a cracker. Like, that is, and it's like a 1 minute episode. So then it became like, well, what if I actually make recipes that I come up with on the spot? And very few times did I prepare. I just kind of set up the camera, set up the lighting, and just went to town.
Well, you were playing. And
yeah.
I think that speaks to the power of art, right? Because we don't create a silo as much as we try.
Right.
You can see it in so many lenses, and it works on so many levels.
I love that you got that narrative from it.
Yeah, I knew that's what you were going for, but I was like, whoa, this is intense, you guys. This is intense. And what are you working on now?
Yeah, so that is, I've set up the teaser into the next project coming out of an episode of Are You Gonna Eat That? Because it's, so, you know, like I like to think about the story behind the people creating things. Mm. And so the next project is called Geminate, and it's, you know, Geminate, like Gemini, but with an 8 at the end instead of an I, and it's Nate is my name, Nathan. So it's about the many different hats I wear. So in teasing it, you know, people are like, you've created a clone army, because I'm using a lot of green screen, I'm using
super high tech. I was like, oh my God, he has turned a corner.
I have. And it was like, also, like, again, I'm playing. And I was like, how do I do this? I've never used a green screen in my life. So the first teaser has all 8 of me in a room. 7 of them are on a bed. And like, the green screen work is not great. It's like a little, like, there's some blurriness and some haziness going on. But it was super fun to figure it out. And so I did that, you know, one night. I got really excited and just started playing. And then, so the basic concept is, as a Gemini, we're known for having multiple personalities. And I'm not doing anything with dissociative personality disorder. It's not a psychological thing. It is...
That's what you think.
Right. Whatever the viewer wants to see is fine. But for me, it's about, like, we, as a Geminis, get a bad rap sometimes, for good reason sometimes. And so it's like about who shows up for that engagement. Is it the fun one? Is it the professional one? Is it the hypersexual one? You know, there are all these different hats I wear. I'm going to stop saying we, because it's a show truly about my experience. And it's about the negotiations that go on within ourselves to fit a situation, to really, like, we like the phrase, put your best foot forward. So, like, put your best personality forward. So I'm having fun with exploring what that is in a show. And I'm going back and forth, like, is this, like, I'm thinking about having the first season be trying to get one thing done. And if it were to be in real time, it would be like a minute, but it's about the internal dialogues that we go through just to get one thing done. Like, who's doing what, when, do I need to go back? Are you going to wear that? Like, so it's all about that process of how the mind works. And
it's like a cosmic minute in the layman experience.
Yeah. There's a, there was a theater director I worked with. She's amazing. Carrie Margolis. It was called Mythic Time. It was like, what if this second slowed down? What happens in that second? And how does that play out? And so it's kind of like Mythic Time, I guess. Thank you, Carrie Margolis.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're living in a mythic time right now.
Yeah.
Right?
It is. It's the fastest, slowest year.
That's a great way of putting it. Yes, it is. My goodness. That gave me pause, right? Let me honor this. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so my second teaser is now out for Geminate. I recently got a haircut for the first time in a pandemic.
Isn't that amazing? I daydream about haircuts.
Yeah.
I still don't want to get one, but I daydream about
it. I immediately had regret. Like, I was like, where's my hair? So that's what the second teaser is about. Is like, the hypersexual one's like, you've cut off my power source and...
That's hilarious. And which Nate do you relate to the most?
All of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all me, truly. Like, there's one that seems to be the central figure, which I'm not sure I'm... Like, the central figure doesn't appear in the second teaser. Ah. It's just three of them. But, like, the guy who is making Are You Gonna Eat That is kind of the central figure, right? He's the attention seeker. And I think that might be me at my core. I don't know if there will be one that emerges as the central figure, but in the teaser, at least...
So, you know, we including myself as a Gemini, mm-hmm. we create all these projects, especially during the pandemic, that we have all control of, right? Because we have that ability. You can create, you can multiply. Mm-hmm. How do you think that transition is going to be when the world opens up? You know, sometimes I wonder, wow, is it going to be easy for me to kind of collaborate on a real basis again? Am I going to be able to take these invitations and do good on them? Or am I going to stay in my house until the end of time?
Yeah, there is something about emerging, right? There's a barrier there that's internal.
It's in the air. It's like a little question mark. It's like, okay, are you ready?
Right. And, you know, I had dinner with some friends yesterday, and we were all kind of awkward at first. We were like, it's our first dinner out. What do we do? How do we talk to each other? And... it is truly baffling. I don't know if I'm going to be able to collaborate. I mean, yes, I want to the world, I will be able to collaborate.
Exactly.
However, it's going to take some negotiations, like in my own self. Remembering how to, like even sharing space with somebody.
Right.
That is a complicated, like right now us getting to sit together is a privilege and it's rare.
And we had to like say our disclaimers, I'm vaccinated, I'm not, blah, 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 blah. Yes. Do we hug, do we fist, like...
Do we fist? Do we fist?
it has to be negotiated, you can't just do it.
No, it's a common greeting these days.
I mean, so I think, yeah, it's interesting. And at the same time, I feel like, wow, everyone is going to be so starving for something.
Yeah.
And... which is great, also slightly dangerous because then we'll go into it blindly.
Yeah.
But it's a really exciting time because, again, we get to kind of invent the wheel or invent the parameters of how are we going to create in this space and what are we going to say?
Right.
Right? Which is a loaded question, which at the end of the day, I really think, you know, it comes out just like in your videos. I saw all these craziness. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and I think there's like a level of accepting that we don't know. Mm. We don't know what that next step is. I try not to get caught up in like what the future looks like because the right now is hard enough.
Yeah.
So like working on this moment rather than, and not to say like there should be some planning, there should be like all of those things. But if I get caught up in 3 moments from now, I'm going to miss out on this one. So absolutely. Like, how do I stay present yet be prepared?
Yeah.
That's a hard question.
I mean, how do we stay aware of the perfection of this moment, right?
Right.
It's amazing. What are some of the things you want to experience while you're here in New York? What are you looking forward to?
People. Like, I think that's the number one thing is, like, I want to see my people, the people I love, the people I care about. I came in with very low, not low. I came in without expectations of anything being open, without of anything being accessible, so that I could just experience what happens. Would I love to go see a play? Absolutely, but that's not happening. So I might, you know, I've been thinking about a museum, checking out some museums, seeing some art.
When you said people, I immediately thought, yeah, right? Because there is a certain energy of the people in New York. Do you feel you take that with you to LA, to Minnesota? To
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have some a joke with some friends. I have a blog as well called Neurotica, and we always say Neurotica translates. And because I, no matter where I am, I'm kind of just like there. Like, I don't try to, I used to, I think, feel like I had to fit a, like, mold into the local community, whatever sure. it is. But now I'm kind of like, I stick out no matter where I am, and I just kind of am me. And some people might interpret that as abrasive. I think of it as personality. And I think, like, I take with me the feeling of directness. I try not to, I don't know. There's, like, the people pleaser in me who wants to assess the situation and fit in as needed. But then there's also the direct confrontation person in me who's like, I don't have time for this.
And so, you found that, Nick, here in New York.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you know, I think it's such an important thing. There was a song in the 90s that was in the soundtrack of Romeo and Juliet, and I think it's called the Sunscreen Song. Oh, and it's just a bunch of, like, advice.
Yep.
And one of the advice was to live in New York, but leave before it makes you too hard.
Right.
And live in Southern California, but leave before it makes you too soft.
Totally.
And as a softie, as a people pleaser myself, I feel like, yeah, New York is such a great lesson for that. Yeah. How to be present in your skin and not be intimidated or shy away from confrontations, because that's how things are confronted, right? By being confrontational and addressing them. And that's such a New York thing that people don't even... I mean, I remember even ordering coffee when I got to New York. My LA self was like, excuse me, can I have a cup of coffee? Right. People were like, give me a dark and strong or whatever. And I'm like, whoa.
I know.
Like, even that.
What about please?
Right. What about high? And again, it's such a New York thing that,
yeah,
you know, again, take as much as you can, but leave before it makes you jaded and hard, right?
Right.
How has LA changed you?
It has helped me to appreciate, like, slowing down. I think before I moved to LA, I was constantly on the run. Like, I mean, from life. I was, like, running as fast as I could to get away from my past, to get away from my experiences. And LA really allowed me a moment to actually sit with it. And I think, like, through working on myself, like, just taking time to actually be me rather than, which is so funny, right? Like, you hear about people moving to LA to be somebody else too. But it was like my complete opposite experience. I didn't meditate my life until I went to LA. Mm. And I think, you know, that's such a West Coast stereotype too.
I love it.
But I drank the juice. I found myself in LA. And I think I don't think we ever truly find ourselves. I think we're always finding ourselves and figuring that out.
And isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I feel more me than I ever have, even though I've always been me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just, like, learning to accept who I am. I always thought I had to be somebody else.
That's really interesting, because I feel like you said, you know, you were running from these things, and there's... As an artist, we have that power to kind of do something with these things that we're running from. Mm-hmm. That once you stop, you're like, oh, this is really good material that I can do something with.
Totally. Right?
Have you been able to process that through your art?
Yeah, more through my writing, I think. And I think my writing has, my writing has changed completely. I think I used to write about more how hard my life was. Hmm. And now it's more about like what my life has become and how hilarious it is. Like every day is hilarious. And I get the opportunity to find the humility of the moment rather than, you know, it's not an expose about what happened. And I have written some stuff that has upset people. And
it has to come out.
It does. Yeah. And I've taken some things down because it upset people. And looking back, I was like, wow, I really said some shitty things. But I think I needed to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you clear the air, you can laugh.
Right. 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 So I also think, like, even as my cooking show is high art and silly, like, I've been able to explore things there, too. Just things that come up in the moment. You know, like, I think even through experiencing food, or no matter how weird it is, we're able to, like, shine lights on things that are unexpected. And, like, thoughts come up and I share them with my audience. So I don't know. I don't think we need to be in an academic setting or on a panel to discuss real life things.
I love that. What was your first introduction to art?
So when I was 5, I remember I was the ring leader in a lip sync circus.
that sounds amazing.
In kindergarten. Yeah. So I was so excited that I got to be the ringleader. And, like, all of my classmates were animals. And, you know, it was so silly. And it was just a record playing with, like, the ringleader, you know, talking about the tigers and the lions. But I had to, like, mouth the words with a microphone and a top hat and a cape. And I was like, that was the first foray into performance. And it's a very vivid memory for me. I remember my parents came to see it. And it was so stupid. It was like under fluorescent lights, and it was, you know, an audience of parents. But it was so fun. And so that, then, like, throughout my elementary years, we did class plays and reenactments of stories, and I always just really liked it. And then I was trying in middle school to be the athlete that, you know, everyone thought I should be, the football player, the basketball player. And I didn't like it. And so my 8th grade year, I quit the football team due to a knee injury. I say that with quotes. I think I did hurt my knee, but it wasn't bad. I just made it worse than it was because I was an actor. And I tried out for the musical, and I got cast. I think everyone got cast, but, like, I'm not a singer. But I did this musical review, and I never stopped from that moment on. I always was doing theater multiple times a year. And then, you know, like, there was speech team and all of those things. I just did it all and went to college for it. And it was that thing of, like, just being exposed to a small performance in my kindergarten class that struck something inside me.
How amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah. It really was. And looking back, like, those are the memories I have of school. Like, growing up was the plays that I did.
That's so funny. It's interesting you talked about being the sports guy, because people kind of projected that on you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was big. I was a tall, big guy.
And people were like, oh, you should.
You need to be on the football team. And the coaches were, like, trying to get me to be on the football team. And I was like, hey, I think I'm good. Maybe I'll be the manager. And
does that still happen to you now?
Oh, in what way?
In any way, because, I mean, that was the first thing. I'm like, oh, you're so tall. Right? So, yes. Like, do people assume that you are...
That I do tall things?
Exactly. Like, you know? Exactly. Yeah. People just assume...
You know, I mean, yes, I'm very helpful when it comes to reaching, but also...
the only reason I have you over.
What do you need? No, I think, like, it plays out differently now. As a large person walking down the street, I'm perceived differently. And I'm ultimately just a gentle, cuddly person.
Yeah.
But when, like, I'm walking behind somebody with a stroller, they're like, oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to be in your way. And that happened yesterday. And I was like, oh, no, I'm just walking. I'm not, like, trying to follow you. I'm not trying to... but people do get a little nervous, and...
That's what I meant. I mean, yeah. It was a silly question, but that's what I meant, because you come across as such a cuddly, sweet, gentle person.
Thank you.
That, right, your body kind of projects, or we project something different on your body, right? Which happens a lot in society, I think. Which is why I was so interested in talking about you and people projecting you as a sports person, right?
Right.
So as an actor,
yeah.
Does this also...
Yes. Well, what's funny is, like, in my 20s, I was always told, like, you're going to be very castable when you're 35 to 40. And I was like, awesome. Can't wait to... So, like, I was getting cast as the old man, or as, you know, the security guard, or as the, you know, like, all, like, the general in the army. And I'm like, why? Like, I want to play something a little more interesting. Not to say that those characters aren't interesting, but it's also... not my demographic, right? I can also play the part. It's a very strange, it's typecasting, right?
It's programming, right?
Yeah,
like,
yes.
Oh, when you see this
right.
person, and, know that this is what they're going to look like, and this is what you expect.
And it's very Hollywood, still. They're like, oh, you're so tall. Let's put you in the background.
Really?
Yeah.
I would, coming from the perspective of a short person, I would think, oh, you're tall. They'd want you as the leading man, or they'd want you, you know what I mean?
Unfortunately, not yet.
Yet, right.
Yeah.
Well, the grass is always greener, right?
Yes, exactly. And yeah. I mean, there are a lot of actors who are not 6'4". So they're more likely to get cast against somebody who is also not 6'4". You know, like, I don't know if there are as many... tall actors as there are average height actors.
Oh, the plight of humanity.
Like, I know. Like, let's make sure that that narrative comes out of this conversation. Like, oh, poor me. I'm so tall.
Poor me. I'm so short. We'll meet somewhere in the middle.
You're not that short.
This podcast is sponsored by me and CollageDream.com. Get your collage kits and start making space for your personal narratives through collage. Want to dive in deeper? Take a collage therapy session. Nope, I'm not a doctor, nor am I an engineer, but I am an artist. Let me help you get through your blocks, creative inquiries, and guide your curiosity. Go to CollageDream.com. The studio is open.
Tell me, let's fantasize a little bit.
Yeah.
What's your ideal project right now? What would be something that would totally just fill you with life?
Well, my series Geminate would fill me with life, and it is.
And putting it where? Who do you want? Where do you want it?
I would love to just have a TV series on, I don't care, Netflix, Hulu, Apple, whatever. I think it would be so fun to have people see the work I want to do. And, you know, the work I want to do is never going to be as good as I want it to be, because I'm self-producing it at home in my own studio, which I don't have the people working with me to help me build the actual thing I want to build. So it's going to be like a stripped down version of what I really want to do. And that said, it is bringing me so much joy. Yeah. So, like, if I could have a team helping me, it would just be something even bigger and better than what I think is already going to be pretty great.
Yeah. Isn't that exciting? And that's something, a huge possibility now that things are opening up. And
right.
Again, talking about how are we going to collaborate with people and how are we going to negotiate this. And I think it's a little different, I would think, with producing something, because... you actually need money to do something like that. But there, you know, there is this whole artist economy and how we collaborate and how we can lift each other up and create amazing projects. But yeah, visibility is such an interesting conversation, right?
Yeah.
Because as creators of art, of content, if you want to call it that, there's just so much out in the world grabbing your attention. And I think it's easier to grab something with like flashy, bright colors. But when you're trying to say something or convey an idea, it gets a little trickier, right? So what are some of the things that you do to captivate an audience or to reach the people that you want to reach?
If that makes sense? It's a really funny dilemma. So I recently decided, like in the promotion of this thing that I'm doing, like there has to be equal parts inventiveness and thirst. You have to put something sexy out there in order to get anyone to look at it. It's mind-boggling to me that if you're not shirtless in one of your things, it's going to be so much like less consumed. And I find that equally sad and hilarious, because sex sells.
Isn't that wild?
It has always sold, and currently it might be the only thing selling.
I mean, it's spring, people, you know, people will be people.
right. And I mean, I think we've had this conversation before, just not on the record. Social media and the detriment to our processes and our society. I loathe it, and I find it fascinating.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I, you know, as we're talking about typecasting, I also see it as a way of programming, right?
Yeah.
With these hashtags as well, you create, and it's funny. I'll use the tag gay or gay boy, and you get tons of likes. And I was like, oh well, that's great.
Yeah.
And I only put it when it's relevant, which is basically everything that I do. Yeah, I know. I am a gay boy. A gay man. But then I see the numbers when, like, you get more numbers if you show your face, or if you show more than your face, you know? And that's, I mean, and I guess that makes sense, right? Because you want to see a reflection of what you're feeling and what you want. I don't know. But that's really interesting. I think a lot of artists shy away from stepping in front of anything, because they use their art to hide, right? Even behind a character or a project. But yeah, there's just so much vulnerability that needs to come across. But in another conversation we were having off the record, it's this double-edged blade of awareness. Mm-hmm. You can't think about it too much.
Right.
And I think you've kind of found a sweet spot, because you're having so much fun with it that it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I'm creating a project that is not just me. It's like eight me's. So like I in a way am hiding behind something, because the only way that it's truly me is if all eight are together. And so I'm not really showing myself, but I'm still trying to be vulnerable. Because one of the things that I continually am working on is being more vulnerable in my work and in my writing. And I have had this huge block previously. And I'm really trying to explore how to eliminate that block, or to not eliminate it, like acknowledge it, move on from it. So while I want this project to be fun and weird, I also want it to be real, honest, and to convey something beyond light fluff. And that's a hard place to start from.
It is.
Yeah.
It was a lot of pressure as well, right?
On myself, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I guess I'm tying that into the social media campaign, you know, because there always has to be a campaign to promote something.
I always forget that part.
Well, you have a large following, yeah?
Well, you know, the grass is always greener, but... Well, this kind of leads me to another question, or another comment, I guess, because we have our community, mm-hmm. and we have our followers in quotations. Yep. Yep. And these are people that I know, right? These are people that I love. Mm-hmm. But these are not the people that are going to help me pay my rent or to get this project on Netflix or whatever, you know? Right. So then it becomes a different facet, right? Because when I put something on Instagram, now I'm not putting it with the illusions of I'm going to get a gallery or I'm going to get a museum show. No, this is for my community, like the people that I know are going to come.
Exactly.
And then it turns into something else, right? So it's like, well, how do you work on the other facet? How do I connect with the people who will take me to the next level? You know, it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. Like, I 100% agree with you. We're creating for a community. And then there's also a part that's like, I'm tired. Oh, I don't want it to sound. I'm tired of creating work with people thinking that I am just that guy who's doing that on the side.
Right.
Like, I'm tired of always trying to legitimize myself when my work is already legitimate. It might just need a little zhuzhing. and that's by getting other people to help you. And granted, I don't ask.
Mm.
And that might be on me.
Mm.
But, oh my God, it's leading right back to the conversation we were having before we started having this conversation, which is, why are we not asking for what we want? Because we expect them to read our minds.
And it's such a good time to ask right now.
Yeah.
Because everyone's willing to just be part of something exciting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And as artists, I think I was having this conversation yesterday as well with somebody else. I was meditating. And in my meditation, you know, I was like, oh, artist is synonymous to awareness. You know what I mean? And as creators, it sounds so amazing, right? As creators, you're aware of things. But not everyone is aware of the things that you're aware, right? Mm-hmm. And people have no idea what goes into creating 8 Nates.
Right, right. Yeah, it's true. And that's, I know. It's hard to think about too. Like, I'm writing the scripts right now, and I want to keep calling them all the same name, but how do you write that script? So like, Nate is talking to Nate, but also, so I've broken them down into like character defects and character assets. It's no secret I'm in recovery. And so like, a lot of the exploration I do is about my character defects. And it's not to say that I am a defective human, but I have habits that I've relied on that maybe not serving me. So what are those? And then what are also the attributes that I get to rely on that have saved me? So those are kind of the characters that are emerging rather than just, you know, so I'm looking at myself through a different lens. If I could isolate each of these things and give them their own voice, what does that look like? So back to the point, it takes a lot of fucking work.
It takes a lot of fucking work. It really does. And can I ask you about your recovery?
Yeah.
How has your art facilitated that?
You know, it's so funny. I think my recovery initially facilitated my art. I was not working as an artist for most of the time I was not in recovery. So I think that was a crucial place, a crucial juncture where I found my artistic voice again. Like, I kind of broke from it early on in my 20s, and then I rediscovered it in my late 20s, early 30s. It's like, oh, this is the path I want to be on, and then maybe I'm supposed to be on. So, first of all, like, my recovery facilitated my art, and now my art, you know, it's all about, for me, being honest, like, being honest with myself and being honest with my community and the people, my audience. Not to say that you can't tell a wild tale that's not true, because I also include, you know, like creative nonfiction is where my jam is. It's nice.
Yeah. Well, it always comes through though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As much as you try to code it, it always comes through.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I believe that the truth is always the most important thing to share. How you share it is maybe creative.
Yeah. Well, before I let you go, I always ask it because I'm always looking for things that give me life and inspire me. Other than your creative projects, what's inspiring you right now? What are you eating? What are you watching?
Oh, God. What am I eating? I'm always eating pickled things. I love pickled things. And
like kimchi?
Like kimchi, as an example, or jardinara. Like, I don't know if you know, like pickled vegetables. Mm. And it's delicious. So is that inspiring me? No, but maybe it's keeping me going. I watched It's a Sin.
I've never seen it.
It's on HBO Max. It's a British show. And it broke my heart. And that kind of truthful storytelling that is, so it takes place, it's a period piece. It takes place in the 80s and 90s. But it is something that's so grounded in queer experience that, like, I hope you get to watch it.
Sounds heavy.
It's very heavy. Mm. And just so well done, well produced, well acted, well everything. And then there's also Generation on HBO. It's, I was skeptical because of some of the parties involved. But it sounds like these parties listened to the feedback from their previous projects and it actually provides kind of an interesting narrative about youth right now. Mm. And
you mentioned It's a Sin, and you said it's a period piece. And I thought, oh my God, 80s and 90s, right. It's a period.
That is a period.
Part of a period.
I know, that was 30 years ago. Like, the end of the show is 30 years ago, which is so crazy to me.
Wow. And, yeah. And in thinking about it as a period, just like this moment in time will be a period, a heavy period. Yeah. That was a very heavy period as well.
It was.
And in thinking of the absence of all of our mentors, for lack of better words, as gay men, mm-hmm. Growing up, did you feel you had gay mentors?
No. Not at all. I thought it was a sin. I was raised Catholic. And I didn't have anyone to turn to have those conversations. And I grew up in a very rural, small town in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota. And I don't think I had mentors that were gay men for a very long time. Like, even in my college years, I can't think of the people who I looked up to or who showed me the way. I think women became the mentors.
Absolutely.
And they were like the unsung heroes of that time who helped shape so many young men's lives and really saved a lot of us.
Yeah. And still.
Right.
Doing the work still.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's also really an interesting conversation to have that, you know, when you grow up in these environments and you do think it's a sin, and then you move to another environment like New York or LA mm-hmm. or San Francisco, your mentality doesn't change overnight. There's mm-hmm. a lot of reckoning to be had. Mm-hmm. How was that process for you?
Hard. It was difficult. It was, there's the initial knee-jerk reaction of, like, I want to be everything opposite of that. So, like, you live loud, you live proud mm-hmm. for a few minutes, and at least you fake it. And then, there's still that shame that lies underneath. And it was years of therapy. It was years of deprogramming to like really be okay with the fact that loving another man is not a sin. I think there's probably still pieces of me that are going through that work still. It's definitely not in the forefront of like my experience, but I still, when I go back to Minnesota, think about it. I still think about the things that I have to hide or not be.
Mm. It's a lot.
Yeah. And And it's not to say, like, if I were to be fully me in that setting, would I be perceived differently? I don't think so. I think it's just my own stuff. And even with family, you know, it's, I think I also try to protect people from that experience. Mm-hmm. And I think because I think it's probably still a sin. Like, even in my very distant relationship to that experience.
It's hard sometimes because not only you find yourself having to heal and protect yourself, but then you also have the task of protecting the people around you from that.
Yeah. Right?
In thinking about deprogramming, what do you think is a good way of doing that? Because we're constantly being programmed, right? TV, music, the algorithm. A little segue. First of all, I want to on record thank you.
Oh, yes.
Because you were my first collage therapy. No, not therapy. Oops. See? Programming.
Therapy.
Collage kit subscriber, which means so much to me. Thank you. You will always be my first, so thank you.
Thank you. I'm so honored.
For that.
I know.
but this project in these kits, I thought, I'm kind of like sending a message. I'm programming people, so I'm very deliberate about the things I put in there, mm-hmm. and I want them to be a really good experience.
Right.
Right? And in just thinking about how the smallest things can program you, mm-hmm. right? How do we, and this is a loaded question, but it could be anything really. How do you feel that you deprogram yourself?
For me, I think it's really about exposure, knowledge, reading, experiencing things that are not like you. Mm. And I think that is the number one thing. You know, people who live in the same environment their entire life don't know anything different. Therefore, they are scared of the world outside. So I think just being able to, in some ways, it's a privilege to be able to leave where you are from.
Sure.
But it's also sometimes a necessary step in survival. So I think, like, experience, for me, it was learning that there are belief systems that don't think you are a sin. And even within those belief systems that do think it's a sin, there are portions of it that are more accepting. Mm. So, like, it's complicated. Like, there's so many layers of that deprogramming. And because I feel like you have to, if you feel, God, it's like a trap.
Yeah.
If you feel like you don't belong, you have to find the exact opposite first to really understand what that is. And then you have to find where in the middle you are. It's a journey. And therapy helps.
Therapy absolutely helps.
Including collage therapy.
Collaging helps. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about self-preservation, right?
Yeah.
You will survive. You just have to keep on going, keep on going. Yeah, that's really amazing. Well, listen, I am so excited to have had this conversation
Thank
with
you.
And I'm really excited about your projects and getting to see 8 different versions of you.
In a way, it's like collage, Luis, because I am layering myself on film.
It all comes down. Yeah, it's all connected. Yeah. I mean, wow. Nate, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you've heard something that moved you, please share it. You are the candle that can ignite 1,000 flames. I am Luis Martin, the art engineer, sharing with you what moves me.